Rain was falling, popping against his hood. Back in the churchyard, back among the dead. The rest of the town could learn a thing from the way they laid there without screwing anything up. He closed his eyes, shook his head. His chest quaked as he sucked air.
See the show today?
Dante didn't turn. He cleared his mind as best he could and gathered up the shadows.
You were there, I'm sure.
Ah, already I begin to see how you survived.
The voice was nasal, accented with the clipped, burnished words of the kind of man who rode around in knee-breeches. Dante faced him then, expecting a strong-chinned, empty-eyed lord, and meeting instead a skinny, dirty, two-steps-from-sackcloth greybeard with stringy hair and an air of patient amusement.
"What do you want?"
"It isn't what I want. It's what you want, Dante."
"Now that's downright profound," Dante said.
He froze, tightening his grip on the nether.
"How did you know my name?"
"Lucky guess," the old man said. "My name's Kelly."
"Pretty nice beard for a Kelly.
I think I've been hearing that joke for longer than I've been alive."
Kelly smiled at Dante, letting him stew.
"It's short for something obnoxiously longer."
"I'm sorry," he said,
unsure why.
"Don't be."
The old man folded his hands behind his back and gazed up into the churchyard. A drop of rain hit him in the eye, and he blinked.
"Anyone would be angry after what they did to your friend."
"It was like a punchline without a joke," Dante said. "It's not fair. He was telling the truth."
"What are you going to do about it?"
"Wait a week and find out."
"I know your name,"
Callie said, looking on him with fever-bright blue eyes, a green corona around their pupils.
"Because I'm one of them."
Dante jerked back and lashed out with all the nether he could hold. The old man should have ruptured like a sack of oats, spilled his guts like the devotee in the inn. Instead, nothing. A slight pressure in Dante's ears.
Callie pinched his upper lip, chuckling. "I didn't say I was trying to kill you."
"Oh, I suppose you're just here for a friendly chat about the glory of Iran. That would be boring for us both,"
the old man said, beetling his brows.
"I've got far more interesting things to teach you."
"Like what?"
Dante said. His hand drifted toward his sword.
"Like how they wanted you to find the book."
"Right. That explains why they've been trying to kill me to get it back ever since."
"And sending a single kneeling to fetch a copy of a priceless relic makes sense,"
Kali whooped, slapping his knee with his shapeless black hat.
"I always told them that would be transparent as a window pane, but it always works. It always works."
Dante rolled his eyes. "So, logically, they wanted me to have it."
"Well, they did and they didn't. It's a large organization. It isn't like a single body, where all organs work in harmony. There are many cross-purposes, contradictions, disagreements in methodology."
"Are you expecting me to believe or understand any of this?"
"Think about the gods for a moment,"
Kelly said, then glanced behind him. He leaned in and touched Dante's elbow.
"Walk with me. We shouldn't do this here."
"Good. Where was I? The gods. It always comes back to them, doesn't it? How is it they're able to make everything so clear?"
"Perhaps it's the advantage of their heavenly perspective," Dante muttered.
Kali chuckled at that, a noise surprisingly like heh-heh, and led Dante further into the churchyard. Once a few trees stood between them and the eyes of the city, the old man stopped and mused a moment, listening to the patter of the rain on the leaves.
"We speak of the houses of the Belt of Seleset, as if the gods were all one mind. Yet all of the stories are about how they squabble and shift alliances whenever it's expedient. And who could blame them? Their brothers and sisters and fathers and daughters are all bitches or the sons thereof. In similar fashion, the admirers of Aran are fractured in their methods. The underlings who don't know what's going on see a book's been stolen and are ordered to sprint off and plant you in your grave. Others, notably the ones who give the orders, put the book there for it to be stolen.
Why the hell would they want to do that?
Because it suits their purposes, obviously.
And what's your purpose in telling me all this?
Dante said. Callie just laughed.
A good question.
Listen, do you want to save your friend?
Of course.
Do you think you can do it alone?
I think a lot of them will die,
Dante said.
A crow cawed from among the graves. Callie's own mouth stayed shut.
No, Dante admitted. There's too many of them.
It turns out true justice can always be made up for with numbers,
Callie agreed, clenching his fists and cracking his knuckles.
It's enough to make a man wonder if there's any such thing. On the other hand, a pure state of justice wouldn't be sullied just because, can you help me or not?
Dante grabbed the old man's arm. A cold shock ran from his fingers to his shoulder, and he pulled away.
What are you?
You know what I am, Callie said, deadly soft, and the whole world went dark. Dante staggered back, hands shielding his face until he saw the overcast light of mid-afternoon, the silent flight of birds, the fall of rain, the row on row of long-buried bones.
When he looked back at Callie, he looked old and skinny as ever.
Will you help me?
Teach you,
Callie corrected, holding up a finger.
Enhance your knowledge, maybe a more accurate phrase.
I trust all that running hasn't left much time for reading.
Right again, Dante said slowly. How do you know all this?
Simple deduction, the old man said. And having lived an awful many years in the company of men too given to scheming.
So, why do they want people to steal the cycle?
Callie sucked his teeth, smacked his lips. You should know that already.
Until a few minutes ago, I was under the impression its theft was a capital crime.
Who is Aran?
Is this a trick? Humor me.
The god of death, Dante said. His face flushed, but he let his simplification stand.
More like the god who greets the dead and transfers them to what comes next. What else?
I don't know. He's Carvajal's brother.
A gleam took Callie's eye. And the history between the two?
Not very good, Dante frowned. He gave Carvajal the secret of fire, then Carvajal walled him up so he'd get all the credit.
Callie raised his eyebrows.
Dante thought he had the answer, but it was too wild, too conspiratorial.
The old man sighed and dropped his eyes.
And you seemed so promising.
They want to release Aran from his prison, Dante blurted, and they want someone to steal the book because they can't do it themselves.
You'd make a decent rhetorician, Callie said, applauding.
I can't do that. I don't even know what I'm doing.
Oh, indeed. It's more complicated than that. Much more complicated.
But the book is bait for the kind of person who might be able to help them.
Running you through all the rigmarole like that?
What?
He drew back.
To weed out the ones who can't help?
Callie bit his lip and wagged his head, weighing the statement.
Something like that. Isn't trying to kill me a little extreme? Couldn't they just have me read a few pages and then have a go? Or, you know, ask whether I've ever seen a shadow slithering around like a snake? Wouldn't that be easier than some big charade where either I die or a lot of them do?
First off, the minions who've been chasing you don't know anything more than that you stole the book. They really do just want you dead.
Callie scowled.
I told you, it's complicated. Is that your word for insane?
Lower your voice, for the god's sakes.
The old man winced, patting the air with his hands. It's one of those things that's worked, no matter how crazy it sounds, so it's hardly worth getting into why it works. It has a lot to do with the fact everyone else thinks they're dead in these lands, so if they don't want to spill the beans, they have to be elaborately sneaky about these things. The rest of it's one of those webs of politics where understanding it would take a lifetime of history and then another lifetime of theology. If it turns out you've got two lifetimes to spare, we'll hash it out in front of a hearth some day. But for now, stop asking stupid questions and just believe what I'm telling you. And what's your role in this web? Dante said, ignoring the bevy of suspicions that popped up whenever anyone talked about taking something on faith. Why are we even talking right now? Because I happen to think my brother believers are full of shit. He looked around himself, as if noticing their surroundings for the first time. What are you doing staying in a cemetery anyway? No one comes to a graveyard if they can help it. Smart. Smart enough to ask your damned question a third time. Callie sighed, wrinkling his nose, then laughed just as suddenly. It was supposed to be charming, Dante saw, but he found the man's shifts of mood jarring, a sign of a mind more fractured than fanciful. I am not a fanatic of their ends-over-means philosophy. That's what caused all of this trouble in the first place. He tugged his beard far away. So, I'm cast out. Meanwhile, they found a way to tell people about the power of the book and the truth of Iran without exposing themselves, then recruit the few who can actually make any use of it. But you know what happens to tools that don't get the job done, right? Or tools that ask too many questions? What? They're thrown away, you idiot! Callie huffed. His breath curled in the moist air. But I know the same things they do. He narrowed his eyes, sly. The things that can't be learned by reading the cycle. I can turn raw men into great men, and in so doing steal them away from the hands of my foes. He smiled, and with his grey beard and bright eyes, Dante thought he looked like a grandfather who'd spoil a boy hardened by the father's tough love. He shifted his feet. Every man of Iran I've met so far has wanted to make my head a separate entity from my body. Indeed. And when you tried to throw that little trifle at me, what did you feel? You barely had to think to deflect it, Dante replied. You could have smashed me to bits. Tiny ones. But then I'd have blood and bone all over my cloak. Callie cracked with laughter as he stroked his grime-streaked rags. Dante shut his eyes. He'd resigned himself to flinging himself at the men who held Blaze in chains and dying in the attempt. Ever since he'd run out on the village, he'd felt hemmed in, a minor part of an infinite play, casting out blindly for a force that could never be his. 3 months since he'd left them behind. He could still see the grasses turning yellow in the heat of high summer as he ran down the path that led to Bressel, still smell the dairy-like stink of his feet when he unbooted them after that first day's travel. Before he left, he'd been taught nothing more than what the monk of Tame who'd housed him had seen fit. The stories of the gods. How they'd created man and then been betrayed by men's foolish arrogance. How we wouldn't know peace until we learned to return to them on our knees and seek forgiveness. A weak-minded lie, the monk told himself, so he could accept his meager place. Dante owed nothing to anyone. And so he'd left, chasing the story of the book. But when he'd found it, the monk's threat of a mediocre existence had been replaced at once by the mortal threat of the men of Iran. Never in his life had Dante been left alone to find his own way. I want to learn, Dante said, gazing into Callie's mirth-wrinkled face. I'll burn the whole city if they stand in my way. Chapter 6.
The vault was as good a place as any for their work, Callie had declared, if a little dramatic. So there they went. Callie swung the door shut behind them, closing them in darkness. Dante reached into his pocket, and his torch stone bathed them in a pale light.
"Where'd you get that?"
Callie said, seating himself on the pedestal near the front of the room.
"I've always had it." "I may have made it, for all I know."
Dante lowered himself to the cold stone floor and tried not to sigh too loud.
"Made a lot of them, did you?"
"I did, actually, so stop making that face. We all need money." Callie puffed out his cheeks and looked around himself.
"So, let's see about trying some terminology to these vague things you've taught yourself so far. We'll start at the beginning."
"Oh, good.
Modern understanding says the ether is the force that illuminates the firmament and bestows motility to man and beast. Some schools take this a step further, equating this original force with jurisprudential order, explaining that just as the laws of our courts are derived from the reflection of the perfection of the revolution of the heavens, so are the laws of man's nature a reflection of the animatory power of the belt of the Seleset. So, personally, I feel these schools are unnecessarily harmonious, establishing a false dichotomy of order meant to reinforce the position of the elite in the minds of the blank-slate boys they're supposedly educating. Any idiot can see this school is an artificial imposition of the human mind. As if the mishmash of vengeance and despotism we witnessed this afternoon bears any resemblance to the unabridged consistency of the stars. Do you think the ether's responsible for poor Blaze's fate?"
"No," Dante said, face stony.
Callie barely noticed, launching himself into the next phase of his lecture with the intensity of a man who spent decades thinking about an audience to relieve the pressure of his head.
"Tell me what I just said," he said some 10 minutes later.
Dante turned his hands in his lap.
"You said the nether..."
"The ether."
"You said the ether,"
Dante said, pausing until he was certain there'd be no interruption, "lurks behind all things, and that's where we draw our power."
"That's not what I said."
Callie snatched his cap from his head and twisted it in his bony hands.
"You're just parroting the book, treating the ether like the mirror image of the nether. Is gold the opposite of silver? Is the sun the opposite of the moon? You've got it all backwards."
"Backwards?
First the ether, then the nether. How can you define the primary when your view of the secondary is all warped up? You don't even have the grounding to understand the words primary and secondary are themselves gross assumptions of the tame-based perspective."
Callie scowled, combing out his beard with his fingers.
"Listen, I've got some things to go do."
"But I haven't learned anything," Dante said, rising to his feet.
"I'm beginning to understand how true that is. I'll be back by dark."
Callie pushed his frail back against the door. It grated open, and he wormed into the gap.
"Meditate on what it means to be a duck," he called back into the tomb.
"A duck," Dante said, but the old man was gone.
Dante wandered from the door and propped himself on a shelf. Somewhere across town, Blaze was in a room like this. Probably it was smaller, darker, had been home to more of the dead than this mausoleum. Dante punched the stone shelf, then sucked his bleeding knuckles.
"A duck. What the hell was that supposed to mean?"
If this was a game, why didn't Callie just spell out what he wanted? If Dante was supposed to do all the work without any guidance, what was Callie doing there in the first place?
He took a long breath. There was a chance Callie knew what he was doing. He was very old, after all.
If he wanted ducks, Dante would give him ducks. He'd give him so many ducks, the old man would be ashamed he'd ever given him such a juvenile exercise. Okay.
A duck had wings. It had webbed feet, like the kneeling, but that couldn't be important. A duck had a bill. Feathers. Liked water. Could travel by land, sea, and air. Was that it? That its home was everywhere and thus nowhere? That sounded like the kind of shallow paradox that would send Callie twittering. What else? What made a duck a duck? Was it the feet, the bill, the feathers, the sum of its physical features? If you chopped all the duck-like parts from different animals and sewed them up into one new animal, would you then find yourself holding a duck? Or was the opposite true? A duck was created with the inherent element of duckiness that informed its growth from the egg itself. Dante glanced at his torchstone as its light grew dim and found he was no longer angry. He dug a hunk of bread from his pack and chewed. It wasn't a chicken or a goose or a swan. It was close, but the differences were enough to earn it a separate name. It walked on two legs, but it wasn't a man. It swam, but it wasn't a fish. Dante traced the mallard in the dust on the shelf. He didn't think Callie intended him to define it by what it wasn't. In the end, a duck was very few things. There was a whole world it wasn't. Was a duck its quack? Nothing else he knew quacked. Geese honked, but that was different. Hens clucked and roosters crowed and chicks peeped. Meadowlarks sang and starlings chirped and crows cawed. A duck, it seemed, was the only thing that quacked. That must be part of it. If a duck walked up to him and asked him about the weather, that would make it, in some sense, a man. Still a duck, but less duckish. He bounced his heels against the stone wall beneath his seat. How long could you spend sitting around thinking about ducks? Was there a point where you'd know everything there was to know? He decided to go back to basics. Ducks lived in pairs, but sometimes they lived in flocks. Ducks laid eggs. Ducks also hatched from eggs, which he thought might be a slightly different thing from laying them. A duck ate water weeds and bugs, he thought, though he wasn't certain of that. He realized he was just listing their traits without conclusions. Duckiness was something more than what it ate, or how it looked, or lived, or quacked. All of those things were true, but if he told someone who'd never seen a duck all the things he'd just thought, they might be able to visualize one, but they wouldn't really know what made a duck, would they? How could he explain the nature of duck kind so an outsider would understand? Footsteps jarred him from his maze. How long had it been? The sun was all but set. Dante stuck his head out the door, hand on sword, and saw Callie's bent-backed figure trudging up the hill through the drizzle. "Have you dwelt on the nature of duckhood?" he said as he entered. "I have. What have you learned?" "A duck is a duck," Dante said. Callie pinched the bridge of his nose. "Go on." "It's not a chicken, or a goose, or any other bird, though if you told someone that's what a duck is like, they'd start to be able to see one. It's got a bill and feathers and wings. It swims, flies, and walks. So what element can be said to be its home?" He stuck his tongue between his teeth and waited for a cue. Callie screwed up one eye, shrugged. "It quacks," he tried. "Nothing else quacks. Except a duck call." Dante went pale. He hadn't thought of that. "I don't think you can ever define a duck," he said slowly. "If you could, you'd have created one. I think all you can do is describe it, piece by piece, until you've got an animal like nothing else." "An interesting theory," the old man said. "Well, am I right?" Callie pulled back his chin and snorted. "How the hell should I know? Well, why did you make me do all that thinking about ducks if you don't know what one is yourself?" Dante said, pounding his fists against his thighs. "You weren't doing well with the discursive approach. What else do you want?"
Why ducks?
To hear you quack, Callie shot.
That doesn't...
Dante snapped his jaw shut. He walked to the back of the room and glared at the inscriptions on the wall. His face felt hot as a branding iron.
Making sport of one's students doesn't strike me as an enlightened instruction.
Callie laughed brightly.
Were you so petulant with whoever taught you to talk like that? Do you always expect the ones you teach to read your mind?
Youth! Callie spat, a grunt so hateful Dante's scalp tingled. He spun around and Callie's pinched face opened with laughter.
You take yourself too seriously, do you know that?
He rubbed his hands together and got the look of a man who's just had his first puff on a pipe. I suppose you want to get down to business.
That had crossed my mind.
Double-crossed it, maybe, Callie said, looking worried. His eyes flicked to Dante, and he smiled tightly.
Think about the nether the same way you taught yourself to think about the dock.
That's it. Dante's mind flashed with the notion this had all been a mistake, that he was wasting what short time he had left.
What about this ether stuff?
Callie waggled a hand.
Forget it. We're taking a new approach. Dwell long on the nether, and we'll see where you are in the morning.
But the night's just started.
You haven't shown me anything. Patience, he thundered. It's a week from now till your destiny becomes known. That's as long as it took the gods to build the world. Do you really think this will be harder than the creation of everything in existence?
Dante worked his throat, and Callie stepped forward, craning his thin neck.
You know what happens to apprentices who try to work gold before they've hammered iron, don't you?
They're commended for their initiative.
Their masters stuff them into the forge.
Callie patted his palms against his stomach.
If you unravel all of the secrets of the nether tonight, read your damn book. Lyle's wrinkly, sweaty sack boy. Haven't you ever heard the tale of the tortoise and the hare?
He spun on his heel and left the tomb. Dante closed the door and lit a candle. He yawned, tired as he'd been after a full day's march through the woods. He didn't think the shadows would help. He sat down on the cool stone floor and let his mind unspool. What was Blaze doing at that moment?
Sleeping, staring at the ceiling.
He had no doubt the boy was alive, at least. If the condemned died before they could be killed, the whole process was thwarted. The man they'd killed to get them in this mess, the long-haired man at the inn, had said the priests of Aron had infiltrated the shrines of the other gods. Somehow this inclined Dante to believe Callie's ludicrous assertion that they wanted people to find the book. There was a strange intuitiveness to it all, a compelling alternate logic in sacrificing a few pawns to expose the people like Dante and draw them into the fold.
What were they after?
Rebellion? Build influence in the temples while they scared up talented men to... He still didn't know if he believed it. To release Aron from his starry prison?
How would they do that, exactly? Build a really tall ladder? Or better, hold a fake Olympics to find who could jump the highest and then launch him into the heavens.
He tried to laugh. They were going to take a shot, though, no matter how stupid their plans sounded.
Where did they get that kind of power?
It would come from the nether. He knew that much.
What was it?
He stretched out on the floor and plumped his pack under his head. He closed his eyes and tried to picture what it looked like when he called the darkness to his hand.
It was darkness, yes. Intangible, but it moved less like light and shadow than like water, flowing where resistance was least, pooling in the low places, filling the gaps between things like water filling up a box of pebbles.
But it wasn't water. It moved with a mind of its own.
What was it?
When he drained his thoughts and let the black tide take their place, what was it he held inside his head?
Get up! It's the guards!
Fists pounded on the door. Dante's heart jump-started itself right off a cliff. He couldn't see a damn thing, just the faint light wriggling through the chinks in the wall and the narrow line that traced the door. Pretend he wasn't here. They might be dumb enough to believe it. More likely they'd force their way inside and chop him into geometry. He needed to think fast, act fast. He cleared his mind and let the Nether come. He rose then, drawing his sword with a steely hiss, left hand wrapped in darkness, and swung open the door. "No, it's just me," Callie said in his normal nasal pitch. "Be proud. You looked like you could have scared someone." "I suppose this is a lesson on the virtue of vigilance," Dante mumbled, sheathing his sword. He stepped out into the yard. "I just thought it would be funny." Callie blew into his cupped hands and stood in the feeble sunlight. "Make any progress with the cycle?"
"I fell asleep."
"Good! Sleep's more important than history, as evidenced by the fact the latter puts you to the former." Callie spent a minute gazing over the graves. The morning was foggy, the grasses bent with dew. Their breath roiled from their mouths and hung in the air. One of the yard's many crows cawed out, waited, then cawed again, as if they were asking if anyone was home.
"Did you think on the nature of the Nether?"
"It's like the ocean at night," Dante said. His face bunched in thought. He shook his head.
"I feel like the moon, in a way. When I look on the dark water with the fullness of my face, it rises and heaves to meet me."
"Poetic," Callie judged, "but ultimately as inaccurate as all poetry."
"What do you think it's like?"
"Were you listening at all yesterday? What do you think all that talking was for, my health?"
"Maybe it's not the subjects that are slippery," Dante said, a thrill in his skin, "but the manner of their instruction."
Kelly frowned at him. His grey eyebrows were so thick, Dante worried they'd pull his brow right over his nose. The old man looked away, letting it pass.
"It's not the answers, it's that you remember to seek them. Each definition you find brings you one step closer to an unreachable ideal. Don't take that to mean you shouldn't try just because you can never reach it, of course. That's what babies do."
"Are you a baby?"
"No," Dante said through his teeth.
"Of course not. Who said you were a baby?"
He sighed like all hope had faded from the world. "Don't think of it as hopeless."
"If you had no name for it, would that mean it doesn't exist?"
"We have no single word for this pre-winter breeze that teases you into thinking it might snow, although it's really not that cold, and which kind of buffets against your face rather than streaming or lashing."
He took a breath. "But does that mean you don't feel it? And in a different way than you'd feel a dozen other kinds of wind?"
"Defining the Nether is the work of a lifetime. The only way to keep reaching closer to its central duckiness is to know you'll never be done."
Dante waited to see if there was more. "So you'd define the Nether as semantics?"
Callie shook his head.
"Just keep trying to think about it in new ways, but don't get so wrapped up in trying to understand what it is you stop learning how to use it. That's all I'm saying."
He blinked, chuckled. "Well, not really, but let's pretend that's what I said."
Dante thought, and not for the first time, taking the man as a teacher might have been a blunder. So the old man had thought so deep he couldn't capture them with words. Callie whistled something mournful and keening, ignoring him for the moment. Dante's eyelids fluttered. He clumped the shadows in his hands and unleashed them on the old man, just a sort of probe, and before it reached Callie it disappeared like spit on a summer flagstone.
Callie stopped whistling.
"What was that?"
"Just how much do you know?"
"Enough to know how little you do."
Again, Dante gathered the Nether. This time it boiled off his hands before he could unleash it.
"I said stop that!"
Callie's voice echoed against the walls of the vault. What's your mind like when you call out to it?
Dante asked, clasping a coin-sized pool of the stuff between his palms.
You're not used to it yet. That's why you have to think so hard.
Kelly regarded him with one eye closed.
To me, it's like scratching my ass. My hand's there before I have to tell myself I'm itchy.
That's beautiful.
Dante opened his hand and blew the shadows at Kelly in a puff of tiny motes.
Kelly flinched, scowled.
You could punch me in the stomach and it wouldn't make a difference, the old man said, tossing his head. You could probably stick a sword through my heart and I'd still strike you down, though that must remain a regrettable hypothetical.
Do something, Dante said. I want to see how someone else does it.
Could be useful, Kelly said. His face kept its vaguely bored expression.
Dante was about to ask when he was going to start, when he felt Callie's summons looming in front of him like the empty space beyond a cliff.
Dante laughed and punched the old man in the stomach. He woke up some time later. The world was fuzzy and grey. A toe nudged his side, and he realized it had been doing so for some seconds.
What happened?
You expressed a sudden urge to cease existing, said a blurry, Kali-shaped object. The object helped Dante to his feet, and the boy faltered and leaned against the old man.
See what you wanted to see?
I'd had enough talk, he said, when he trusted himself to speak. His nose tickled. He wiped it, saw blood.
We'll start there, Kelly said. The Nether will come once the mind is ready to receive it, but it's the Nether's nature to thirst for the water of life, and I'm not talking about whiskey.
Blood, Dante said, wiping his fingers in his palm.
Except for that last part, Kelly had sounded like something from the cycle.
Blood.
I'd wondered about all those scars on your arms.
Most of them are actually the product of an oversized mouth.
Kelly smirked, then pressed a knuckle between his eyes and peered at Dante.
Call to it. It's going to look like it's eating you. It's not, so don't be afraid.
It can sense fear.
What? It's not a bear. Being scared just makes you do stupid things.
Dante counted his exhalations for most of a minute, then unlimbered his mind. They came at once, swirling in his outstretched palm, minnow-like wraiths that seemed to flash black.
So far you've worked the Nether in its most basic state, Kelly said. Blood amplifies its strength, allows it to truly alter what it touches.
Dante waited, watching them circle one another. Others came, without being called. The ball expanded from a large marble to the size of his closed fist, but mostly it grew denser until he thought he could feel an icy weight denting his skin.
It's a fragile thing in this state. It burns as violently as Suman's oil.
Little pricks and tingles rippled across the flesh of his palm, as if the leechish things were nibbling with razor teeth.
He no longer felt the dull throb from when Kelly knocked him out. His vision flickered, then returned brighter than before.
The scent of grass stuffed his nostrils. It would snow that night, he knew. He could feel it in the breeze. The muscles of his arm began to twitch.
This is when it wants to create or destroy. This is the Nether in its most potent state. Release it now.
The thing was so dark he could barely bring himself to look at it. The individual motes had stopped following each other's tails, and the ball pulsed slowly, almost as if it were breathing. A note as high as the clouds sounded between his ears. His hand had gone numb. He thought he could crack the tomb with a punch, raise it with a look. Nothing seemed beyond him.
Release it for the sake of the gods! Let it go!
Dante turned his hand, palm down, and jabbed it at the trunk of an acorn tree 30 feet away. Its bole was a foot and a half across. It crumpled like paper,
Splinters of bark shot into the air. A great crack thundered past him. He staggered, stripped of all strength and senses with the departure of the nether. He wanted it back. He wanted the shadowy outlines he'd seen around all things to retake their shape, for his eyes and ears and hands to once more feel like the world's own will. He mewled, and as the tree's wide head boomed into the grass, he fell to his knees, paused there, then slumped in a heap.
"We should probably hide somewhere for a while,"
some part of him heard Callie muse.
"Oh, right."
He grabbed Dante's wrists and dragged the half-conscious boy into the sanctuary of the vault. Dante squinted against the candlelight. He tried to sit up, and the blood rushed from his head.
"They're all going to die," he said, and his laugh twisted into a cough.
He slapped the stony floor, fighting for air.
"Always good for a boy to have ambitions," Callie said. "For your next trick, try something a trifle less flashy. Think of yourself as a channel through which the nether may flow, like the narrow banks of a creek. If a meandering little stream suddenly finds itself engorged by a few 100,000 cubic tons of water, it tends to no longer resemble itself once the flood has gone away."
He got to his feet, eyes glinting down at Dante. "A stream doesn't really capture my meaning, however. Swollen streams aren't all bloody and shrieking and flopping around until they die."
"I'll be careful."
"I doubt that."
"And for God's sakes, eat something. Stop making me sound like your father. These things will burn you up before you know it."
Dante managed to sit up. Nausea and hunger battled for his stomach. He had a headache. He touched his face. It was still there. That was good.
"If you were my father, I'd make patricide popular again."
"Oh, shut up,"
Callie said with no real annoyance. He furrowed his brow. "What were you thinking? Were you trying to destroy the city with your first attempt?"
"I just wanted to see what would happen."
Callie rubbed his chin, whiskers rustling.
"Frankly, you shouldn't have been able to do that first try. Be more cautious next time."
"I am learning fast, aren't I?"
Dante said. He squared his shoulders, daring himself to press for praise.
"I mean, have you seen other people learn as fast?"
"Probably," Callie said, through a yawn. "Some take faster to do it than others."
"Like a duck to water, you might say."
"Ha ha. Why do they pick it up so fast?"
"Why do some students learn to read quicker than others?"
"What? No lecture on the nature of the talent?"
"A physician named Camrates once theorized a correlation between the width of one's veins and one's ability to channel the nether," Callie began, considering the ceiling.
"Obviously bunk. The notion of channeling is only a metaphor."
"That didn't stop him, however, from dicing up a dozen corpses in his search for proof, including a couple that may not have been corpses for another few years if he wasn't so dead set on proving an anatomical connection. No pun."
Dante opened his mouth, and Callie immediately cut him off.
"What's your birthday?"
"February 12th.
Why?"
"Du Set. The two rivers. Ruled by a Ron in the old design, you know. The belt's first link."
"You think your birth sign influences it?"
"No,"
Callie said, sighing heavily.
"That's what some people think."
Dante bit his teeth tight. "You don't have any idea, do you?"
"I think the answer is a boring variation of all things in moderation. It's likely there's some inherent quality that gives one man more facility with the nether or the ether than his fellow, but the strength of one's will probably has a great deal to do with it as well."
"That is boring.
Would it be more interesting if I told you there was a gland in your skull that's probably twice the size of a normal man's?"
"Did Camrates discover that?"
Dante's face went guarded.
"No, wait." Callie chuffed with laughter. "Listen, there's a lot of theories, but none of them are very good.
Would you believe you're chosen by Aran? Or maybe you're the offspring of an imp and a woman? Be practical.
One could well argue it's nothing but practical to try to find out why you're good at the things you do well.
Well, then one would probably be slaughtered by the town watch in a few days, when he should have been learning to kill them instead.
He clapped his hands on his thighs.
You've got work to do, book to read, do it.
You're leaving?
Callie turned and went for the door. Good night. You've got a lot to do. I'll be back in a couple days.
You're always running off just when I'm beginning to learn.
Shut up and accept your progress for once. I could hurt myself, Dante mocked, but Callie was already on his way.
Beyond the doorway, the land was dark. Flakes of snow drifted into the grass. Callie had stayed for hours while he slept. He fished out the rest of his bread and chewed it in the dark. He wanted meat. A beef stew of haunch of lamb. Something so big he'd feel silly taking bites out of it. He clinked the coins in his purse. What use was money if you didn't spend it? Who wanted to save when you could be dead next Saturday?
The following days were quiet. He ventured out for food and lingered around the market, eyes sharp for members of the watch. No one mentioned the executions. They talked about whether the snow would stick next time and the work they still needed to do on their homes, about the new viceroy appointed for Wetton and its farmland, the recent turmoil so intense in the streets of Bressel. A member of the council had been killed, and another had stepped down. The retiring man said he meant to focus on his work at the Guild of Arms, but the talk was he'd been exiled for a secret incompetence even rumor couldn't unravel. Dante edged closer to the four men who spoke of this, daring himself to ask questions about violence he'd seen no hint of when he'd lived there, whether it had anything to do with the city's temples. Strangely, he was concerned for the city. He'd only lived there a few months, but he'd heard so many stories about it as a boy, it had felt like a home from the start. He still considered himself a Bresselman, could speak with more authority than these bumpkins on its onion-domed library, Tenterman Palace, the fiery eyes of the statue of Fanon, planted centuries ago where the sandbar had once regularly grounded the dumber, drunker, or unluckier captains of the merchant fleets. He'd live there again, he resolved. He knew better than to ask about the riots, though. They'd want to know his name, whether he was from the great city, and if he had news of his own. Might even want to know his position on the struggle. He was an adept liar, as all boys learn to do to avoid chores and beatings, and, once they were old enough, public whippings. But he had no room to chance it. His tongue didn't always listen to his brain. He wouldn't have the freedom to join such talk until Blaze was out from under the law. Instead, he went back to the mausoleum, intending to ask Callie next time he saw him. Of the cycle's 800-odd pages, he'd consumed no more than a quarter, and he set on the remainder with the same fruitless abandon he'd spent his money. When he stopped to rest his eyes or stretch his legs, he messed around with the nether, forming a shadow sphere inside the tomb, or sweeping it along the ground to stir the leaves, or send a small rock rolling. He fed it no blood. No matter how badly he wanted himself at the center of all things once more, he was dogged by the memory of how crushingly small he'd felt after he released it and destroyed the tree.
So, how's it been? Transcended this mortal existence yet?
The old man said when he appeared some time later, tugging his cloak tight around his shoulders.
Dante closed the book and looked up. Who wrote the cycle?
Many people, Callie said, fixing him with a look. The first part was assembled, according to the few scholars who've done credible research on the time, in something like a half dozen sources over the span of 60-odd years. The second part is actually much older. Some of them go back as far as we have records. A Gascon scholar named Nettigan once claimed to have found a tablet in the ice north of Narashtavik with an Aran story dated at 9,000 years ago by its description of the locations of the stars. No one was alive back then. How do you know that? Were you there?
No doubt you were. Dante cocked his head. If it's got so many authors, how do we know we can trust it?
It's not like it's the word of the gods themselves, Callie scoffed.
He tugged his fingers through his beard. I think the many authors are a stroke of its genius. They're all collected under the umbrella of authority, that is, the cycle, yet it's possible, if you read closely, to read the writings of men with distinctly opposed states of mind. Who's right, then?
Neither.
Both?
Maybe the answer lies not in the words of the men, but in what emerges from their implied dialogue.
He stuck out his lower lip, conceding. Or maybe one of them is just wrong.
This is dangerous in a sense, since his inclusion in the cycle would seem to make his words infallible. Yet a learned man will know they're clearly false.
Is this intentional on the part of whoever finalized its structure? Is it a deliberate maze meant to guide us not so much to a certain set of facts as to an enlightened flexibility of mind?
Well, is it?
Dante started. I didn't realize those questions were anything but rhetorical.
They weren't, but let's pretend.
We can't know the answers to any of your questions without digging up the authors and shouting interrogatives at their bones, Dante said, not entirely meaning to make fun with his aping of Callie's mode of speech.
But, yeah, that doesn't mean they're not worth asking,
but it does mean there's no way to know for sure. Besides, wouldn't a much simpler explanation be there was no plan? They just scooped up all the legends and poured them between two covers?
I suppose, Callie said.
He huffed. It's possible they didn't write the cycle with the express purpose of refining our mode of thought, but I don't see how else we're supposed to reconcile all the disconnects.
I don't know about that.
When I read the stories of Jack Hand, I see justice in his vengeance. I admire his courage, that he can just seize things and reorder them how he sees right. Isn't that a truth that's always true? It's the story of every age, isn't it?
Ah, the time-honored absolutism of youth.
I'm young, so that means I'm wrong.
No, Callie said.
He sighed. Age muddles things, that's all.
You'll see what I mean if you thwart all decency and live another couple decades.
Ah, Dante said, the time-honored condescension of age.
Mind yourself, the old man warned, but his voice was warm. I suppose you'd even try to make sense of all those numbers the cycle is so fond of repeating. Anyway, I didn't come here for sophistry. Frankly, it bores me.
He scratched his ear, face clouded with thought.
What's the name of your reprobate friend?
Dante looked up.
Blaze. I found a way to contact him.
When can I see him?
You can't, Callie said, silencing him with a look. What I can do is pass him a message.
Tell him I'm coming, Dante said, pressing his hands together. Tell him not to worry. I won't let them get away with it.
Callie smiled behind the thatch of his beard. That'll show him.
What?
Then tell him to start figuring out how he's going to repay me. Is that better?
Much.
Callie yawned and went for the door.
That's it. Aren't you supposed to be teaching me things?
You've already got too much to digest and not enough time to do it in.
Practice. Think on what you've learned. Read the damn book.
I've got better things to do than mope around a graveyard like a widow pining for her husband's yard.
Fine, Dante turned away. Go lecture at someone else for a while.
Choke on your ingratitude, Callie spat. He flipped his hands. Bah!
Wind gusted through the open door. Dante watched him go, then turned his eyes to the walls, to the drawers full of corpses.
Like Jack Hand and the bones of the rats in his prison. He'd been one man against a keep full of defenders, and he'd taken it and made it his.
When Dante first settled into the tomb, he'd found other things dead than men. The leathery bodies and dry skeletons of rats and rabbits that had found their way in, but not out. Pigeons and crows that had taken shelter from the weather and battered themselves dead at the cracks of the daylight in the walls. 7 or 8 tidy piles of bones. Maybe the cycle was a past meant to be borrowed by the ages to come after. Was that why its authors had written it, however many hundreds of years ago? To let later men stand on their shoulders? To preserve themselves through the actions of people they could never hope to meet? Something rustled in the shadows of the vault. He doubted that whoever had written the book, whatever they'd had in mind, they could have seen what he had planned. He hoped it would be enough. Chapter 7. A holy day, a joyous day, the midpoint between autumnal equinox and winter solstice, when Leah left the land and Menoch reluctantly took up its reign, the day, by coincidence, of the execution. Dante watched the sun spark up over the roofs of the east. He'd loved this day when he was younger. The night before was Falmuck's Eve, the night of fire, the night Carvajal flew down from exile to take arms against white-bearded Tame, who'd thrown him out for bringing the fire to man, the night when head-high stacks of wood were burnt in the squares, and boys wore masks and robbed men of apples and tin pennies in the street, slaying any man who bore a beard. The theatre dressed in yellows and reds and bright-burning gems and played out Carvajal's original betrayal, how he lit a torch from the millstar of the northern heavens and descended with it from the skies to the earth. Tame saw the blaze of its fall and gathered his children and his children's children to destroy whoever'd defied him. But Carvajal brought the torch to Eric the Draconat, he who ate dragons' hearts, and Eric climbed the ladder of the heavens to duel winged, scale-backed Darius, and so win his northern army to face the forces of Tame. They met on the snowfields of the north, and the snow churned and boiled under the heat of their blood. There Tame slew Darius, and confusion shouted across the land. Eric's rebellion of men, and the half-gods, and Darius's drakes were smashed, but in the final moment, when Eric struck deep at Tame's heart with Anzode, the sword tempered in the hearts of 108 dragons, he actually spilled the god's blood upon the ground, forcing the Father of the Skies to retreat to his seat in their heights. Carvajal fled then, too, bearing Eric's unconscious body to the hole in the north sky, where Malleus's bow had punctured it long ago. And every year on Falmuck's Eve, Carvajal seduced the blackbirds of Menoch to bear him down to earth and drag the punishing fires of Barod's sun away, so he could wreak his rebellion by cover of dark, and the earth could rest and heal. The next morning, the farmers set down their scythes and ploughs and flails and drank to the cycle of the gods. They toasted Leah for her faithful bounty, praised Sim for making their wheat and oats and barley grow tall, thanked Barod for the life of his yellow rays. They gave a cry for Carvajal's daring that would keep them warm through the winter, for the saturnine locking of the time of Menoch that would make the return of the gods of light and life all the sweeter. Many of them ended up passed out before the sun had gone down. Dante thought he could already hear the earliest revelers singing out in the city. The watchmen would partake too, he knew. There would be few better days for the confusion he meant to sow. "All set," Cali said, when he showed up 20 minutes later. "Yes." "Good. Overconfidence is a strong ally. People are always surprised when you try to do things you can't." He started at the soft skitterings in the dark corners of the tomb, then snorted. "You've been reading too much." Dante flushed, despite the cold. "I haven't had anyone around to teach me different."
"It'll probably make them think they're crazy. That should be fun."
Callie wiped his nose. His ears and cheeks were pink.
Auspicious day.
Does the Nether run stronger on Falmark's day?